Good evening, my name is Mark and I am an alcoholic. It is now time for a newcomer asks. You may have seen this box in the back of the room by the coffee. It's a box. There's some pieces of paper there and some pencils. What we like to have people do is to write down questions that they have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, put them in this slot here, and then we select a question at random to be answered by our panel of experts and using AA-approved literature. This week's selected question will be answered by our member, Suzanne, which entails coming up here.
Hi all, I'm Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, ma'am.
The question is, how does it feel being clean going through the steps? Clean and sober. This is only my experience on what it was like when I went through the steps. And when I go through them again today, some of these things reoccur. First off, it was unfamiliar. I had never paid any attention to what was really going on inside of me and what was some of those behaviors that were making me go crazy. So first, it was really unfamiliar. Yet, at the same time, it piqued my interest what was going to be next. It also was empowering for me to admit to myself, write it down, and also share what I was going through with another human being. I had never been that honest before, which then gave me a sense of great relief to let go of my secrets. At the same time, I was scared to give up control, but I also felt a great sense of relief knowing that I didn't have to try and run the show. And lastly, I wrote free so that I could recover and work on some of those things that were identified. It helped me feel free from all of that was all stuck in the core of me. That's it.
Thank you, Suzanne. And now it is time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. This event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. So now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member of the fellowship since 1881. She has been active in groups in Fairbanks, Alaska, San Mateo, Mountain View, Fremont, and Lemoore. She has been in service in H&I as a secretary and sponsor. Her AA motto is, I drank enough to get here. Hopefully, I drank enough to stay. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Lemoore, California, Monique.
Hi, my name is Monique, and I'm an alcoholic. I did not expect that rendition. I did drink enough to get here. Hopefully, I drank enough to stay. I get excited saying that. I would be at a meeting, and there was a lady there who was very comfortable in her sobriety, and she was always knitting and crocheting. And when I first got here, I couldn't hold a cup of coffee. So for her to be knitting and crocheting was just phenomenal. Her hands were steady. And that was the way she started all of her pitches. And I remember thinking, that is so awesome. So I don't have to debate over whether or not, you know, I'm a member, did I drink enough, or any of that kind of stuff. So that is true. That is so true. Let's see. I used to say that I was born alcoholic. I am from a family of five. I was raised by an alcoholic stepfather and my mother. I'm the fourth out of five kids. And my father was a rice beater. I brought up very afraid about, is he going to kill my mother is what I used to think. You know, is he going to kill her? And I remember, having the choice of whether or not I would get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom or just be afraid and shake. And I remember, knowing the bathroom was right there, but thinking to myself, I can't go. I was just petrified, is what I'm trying to tell you, just petrified of life. And I remember my mother saying that she stayed with my stepfather. Another one I like to say about this too is that the other one I say, and what I've told myself in coming here, show up, pay attention, and tell the truth. So I'm going to tell the truth, And so what happened was, she said she stayed with him because he was able to, provide for us financially. So I remember thinking to myself, boy, if this is why she's going to stay with him, then I'm going to get a job. Because this is not, I'm staying with him because he takes care of us. Oh, my God, if you want to call it that. So I usually have a potty mouth, so I'm really, it's going to really change things because I'm going to try to clean it up tonight. So you'll hear me pull back and, okay, she just edited herself. So anyway, it's the truth. That's the other thing that I got in recovery, too. My first sponsor, when I was about 6 months sober, somebody said that, Monique, now that you're clean, you need to clean up your mouth. I remember thinking, oh, my God, oh, my. So I remember I lamented over that. I thought, oh, my goodness. But you know what? I was so desperate, as the dying was, that I said, if I have to quit cursing, that's what I'm going to do. So I went to my sponsor, and I asked her, I said, Betty, do I need to quit cursing? And Betty looked at me, and she looked me right in the eye. And by now, I'm able to look people in the eye. And she said, God does not listen to your mouth. He listens to your heart. And I've been a cursing SOB ever since. However, it is a work in progress. I always knew that I was petrified of life. I was always afraid of my own shadow. I also knew, somebody asked me this very recently, I also knew very early on that I was the wrong color and the wrong sex. I knew that. I remember thinking, oh, my goodness. I am old enough to remember the march on Washington, 1963. I was about 2 years old. You can do the math. And I remember... and I remember looking at the people, and it was like all wading in the water. They just looked oppressed and sad and things like that. And I remember thinking, that is me, that I look like that. And if these people are struggling and there's a fight, I'm screwed. I remember thinking that. I'm just screwed. So I'm always kind of just tolerating life. Just tolerating. And the other thing she said about staying with my stepfather, too, was that he never did anything to me. What are you supposed to do? I don't know if my mother was sexually abused. That's what I'm talking about when I say that. But I know that she raised me to be afraid about that. And I remember thinking that, and I was the only girl at the time, and I remember thinking, so he may do something to me. So I learned very early on to stay away from my sexuality. I remember, whatever it means being a girl, I don't want it. And that's, okay, I really am cleaning up. And that's the advantage of this day. I was so glad I wasn't full figure. Let me just put it to you like that. You know what I mean? I was so glad I wasn't voluptuous and people were asking me for, my body, because it was like, oh, my God, that's just too much work. One of the friends I grew up with, she started developing at age 7. And when we play hide-go-get-it, when you did that when you were a little kid, we play hide-go-get-it, and Angie would always be over in the corner, stop, stop,
problem, the reason why she was saying that is because she was already developed, and all the boys were chasing after her. Nobody was chasing after me. So, and I was just so glad I was never full figured on that basis. But anyway, so she said he never did anything to us, and so I just kind of swallowed life. I just kind of swallowed things. I used to suck my thumb, actually my two fingers, and so I'm wetting in the bed. I almost said the bad word. I'm wetting in the bed, and I'm sucking my two fingers. I'm already neurotic, folks, so I'm not even five, okay? And it's real clear to me that, you know, I've got some emotional problems. It's real clear to me. So by the time I'm introduced to alcohol at 12, it was like, oh, happy day. Thank you. This is what I've been looking for all my life. And again, I used to say that I was born an alcoholic. I don't know if that's true, but when I took the first drink, an alcoholic was born. I never drank socially, ever. It was never my intention to drink socially. And I wanted to get as drunk as I possibly could. I remember people saying that if you drop cigarette butts inside of the beer can, you'd get more drunk. So guess what? I was butting my cigarettes inside the can, man. I mean, you know, that was the whole goal. I was trying not to feel. I was a numb nut. I didn't want to feel anything, and my whole purpose for drinking was total and complete oblivion. I just wanted to be cut off from any feelings. They were dangerous. So I started drinking when I was 12. And I remember thinking that this is kind of young. I remember thinking I'm liking this a little too well. And so early on in my drinking career, I kind of slowed myself down. I knew to slow myself down. I was always a good student, not because I enjoyed going to school, but what school provided for me in my household was some structure. It was safe. I knew what I was going to do every day at the same time, and it was safe. So I flourished in school, and again, not because I was a good student, but because I had the structure. I came from a very dysfunctional family, and oftentimes when I was in school, I would think to myself that the whole family one day is going to just leave. They're going to be gone. I had serious abandonment issues, just like I do today, and always insecure and always fighting. And so I did very well in school, and I knew that if I drank the way I really, really wanted to, that I would not finish school. And my thing was, back to that black thing, is that I'd also heard that being a black female, it was expected that I was going to be pregnant and drop out of school. So the main thing was, my whole goal was not to get pregnant, and I wasn't going to drop out. So I slowed down. And what I've said in that period is that in my slowing down, say like from 12 to 14, I slowed down in my drinking. And in my mind, because I wasn't drinking the quantities I wanted to, I quit. I really thought I had quit drinking. You know what I mean? I was like, no, you never did quit. You know, but I slowed down. And so that was the beginning of me recognizing I must have a drinking problem. I mean, I knew all the time I had a drinking problem. So, you know, I managed to get through school. I remember turning in paperwork without my name on it because I was a blackout drinker. Teacher asked, whose paper is this with no name on it? It wasn't mine. I have no idea. You know, and then he showed it. He lifted it up. I looked at it. It's like, it was me. I don't even remember turning the darn thing in. So how I got through school, I really don't know. I was a blackout drinker. And part of me liked blacking out because it meant I didn't have to know what was going on, which was just perfect. You know, I did enjoy that. And in the blackouts, you know, when people would try to tell you what happened, I didn't want to know. You know, that's why they're blackouts, folks. Don't tell me, you know. I'm not kidding. And so anyway, finally at 15, my mother asked me, Mike, why do you drink so much? What's the matter with you? You know, and I couldn't answer that question. I really didn't know. And I'm hurting enough now where, you know, I have to kind of take a look at things myself and figure out this is not working for me. And didn't know how to stop, though. I had a guy in the program say that the last 2 years of your drinking, you really just keep drinking because you don't know anything else. And I know that that's true. I didn't know how to quit. I didn't even know quitting was possible. So when she asked me, you know, Monique, why do you continue to drink? I didn't have a clue. But one night I was going out on a date, and it was not a date. It was a drinking escapade. I tell this story because it's significant for me. And it was an opportunity for me to get drunk. That's what dates were. You know, I really didn't like boys. I had three older brothers. And my whole thing was just trying to get away from him. Trying to get away from these guys, you know. And but he was an out. It was an out. And so I went out with this guy. And we'd been out before. And I was gotten drunk before. You know, most of the time when I get drunk with folks, they don't want to go back out with me. You know. Because I was crazy, you know. So he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, well, yeah, okay, I'll go out. And so the first thing that happened was when I got in the car, it was almost as if I had a gun, and he was at gunpoint, and I said, take me to the liquor store. This is our date. And he's like, oh, no, that's not where I want to take you, to the liquor store, you know. And I was just like, take me to the liquor store. So all social graces went out the window. I didn't care. You know, it was just like, you are an opportunity, you're a vehicle for me to get drunk. You know, I'm serious about this. If you don't do it, I'm going to walk, you know. And so he took me to the liquor store, and I tell this, it's the truth. Because he had been out with me before, he came out with one beer. I'm thinking, one beer, you know? Go back in there. This is really what I'm thinking. Go back in there and get one something to drink, you know? So he came out with a six-pack, and my thinking was, okay, now this is mine. You go get yours. We're not sharing this. So it was clear to me, that was a turning point for me, because it was clear to me then that I must be an alcoholic. Can you hear that? I must be an alcoholic. 16. And I told my mother, I said, Mother, I know what my problem is. I'm an alcoholic. You don't know the freedom I felt in recognizing that and coming to terms with that. And my mother was like, well, oh, goody, now we can get you sober and we can do something about this. And I'm thinking, oh, no, you got that backwards. Now that I know I'm an alcoholic, now I'm going to really get drunk, you know. And so she had gone to AA and got these pamphlets from you people, you know, and was telling me you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 16. I'm not going to AA. And, you know, and I remember thinking, you know, I'm not doing it. But I did stop by one time. I was about 18 years old, and I stopped by me. There's a whole bunch of old white men. And at that time, old was 40. Because I was like, what was I, 18? Yeah, old was 40. You know, everybody was smoking. They smoked in the meetings back then, you know. And I was thinking, is this AA? I'm not going to do this. And here's the other thing is that I stopped at the liquor store and I've gotten myself a little pina colada, a little shot that you have. And, you know, and I remember that I've heard Richard Pryor when he talked about that alcohol. It's calling your name. It was in my purse, you know, and it's just calling my name saying, you know, you guys are doing the serenity prayer and all this cheerleader stuff to me. Yeah, rah, 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 rah. And all I'm thinking is, I'm going to go in the bathroom and drink this stuff, you know. So when we took our little break, I went in the bathroom and I took a drink and I left, you know. And I went home and I told my mom, I went to AA. It didn't work, you know. But anyway, so long story short is that as I continued to drink, my addiction progressed, needless to say. I found myself in very scary situations. I am from Los Angeles, and I remember thinking that somebody's going to turn me out. I'm going to be Jane Doe walking the streets in Hollywood, lost forever in the abyss of drugs and alcohol. I was petrified. I knew enough to know being a girl and being a drunk was not a very good combination, you know, and so after a while, my mother sent me up to Fairbanks. That's how I got sober in Fairbanks. She sent me up there. She came home one day, and I was drunk on the front porch. And once again, I had had a blackout. And I remember thinking that I was in the bed, and I was not in the bed. I was on the front porch passed out. That was a very, very common occurrence for me, by the way. And when she walked up the front door and saw me on the front, laying there, I thought, oh my God, I'm not in bed, you know, and her eyes were just like bulging out of her head because she's thinking, I'm dead. And, you know, and so the thing is that what I learned is admitting you're an alcoholic and accepting you're an alcoholic are two different things. I thought by admitting I was an alcoholic that whatever that life was,
that's where I was going to stay. What I didn't know is that the bottom kept dropping. And that scared me. I didn't sign up for this. So now I'm drinking, and I don't know what's going to happen next. And it goes like this. You take the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes you. That's what happens. So she says, you gotta go to Fairbanks with your dad because I don't know what to do with you. And I didn't know what to do with me. I remember riding the buses in Los Angeles, just going up and down the road thinking, you know, where are we going? What are we doing? Lost. Talk about, one guy says it, lost ball and tall weeds. I was lost. And so she sent me up there and, you know, that didn't work out with him because he's an alcoholic too. And what would happen is that between the two of us, somebody had to take care of each other. So eventually, he put me out. So here I am in Fairbanks. You know, I'm really thinking I'm in my haven, actually, because what I knew about Alaska was that there were a lot of alcoholics that lived in Alaska. So I'm thinking, I'm going home. I'm in the right place with all these folks, right? And what happened was that, you know, hitting that bottom, I finally turned to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have my mother to thank for that because I knew exactly where to go. Here's the deal, though. I went to those meetings and I went drunk. And of course I went drunk because if you're alcoholic, you're going to go drunk too. Here's the good news is that in me going to those meetings drunk, nobody said, be quiet. You come back when you get sober. Nobody said that to me. And what I did was I heard the truth and I listened for the truth and I heard you all telling my story. Finally, I felt like I was home, and I remember thinking, you know, that this is the thing for me. This is it for me, you know. But at the same time, because I was drinking, I had to keep drinking. So I had to make this a routine. Every Friday, I would go to a meeting, I'd go drunk, and I'd go home and continue to get drunk. You know, that's how I did AA. You know, the seed was being planted, though, and one night, a girl named Lucia asked my then husband, you know, if she could take me home. I had been hit on by women before too, and I'm thinking, oh, here we go. You know, she's trying to get in my panties. You know what I mean? I'm like, you can't take me home. You know, I need to raise hell in this man's heart. He ain't let me go. You know, and he looked at me, and she looked at me, and you know, and he said, yeah, you can take her home. And I thought, you SOB, you know what I mean? How dare you? And when she took me home and she gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what she told me was, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days, don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk. Keep the plug in the jug. And I thought, man, if I'm going to keep the plug in the jug, why am I buying it? You know? Don't take the first drink and you won't get... Everybody knows it's the 15th drink. Is she crazy? You know, so... And she talked about the basis of the program. God first, sobriety second, Monique third. What do you mean? God first. She said, Monique, because if you don't have those first two things in order, you will not be sober. There won't be any Monique. God first, sobriety second, Monique third. Wow, what a freedom. What a freedom. I'm relieved of the bondage of self. Thank you, God. Well, she wrote my book, September 19, 1981. That's the only reason why I know my sobriety date, folks. Otherwise, it was just a normal drunk. And I didn't read that until 6 months later. Because since you suggested I read the big book, I wasn't going to do it. Woo! I'm not doing that. I still don't read a whole lot today. I buy books for you guys to read it and then tell me what it says. I still don't read, so that part is still, that's pretty consistent. But anyway, it was 6 months before I looked at that book. I was like, September, I was thinking, is that when it was? Because I was a black girl drinker. Is that when it was? September 19th, that's not the funny day. That's the time I know it. She gave me that big book. But here's the thing, I was already drunk.
So I had that mojo going. I had to hit the street. My dad called me a running drunk. When I got drunk, I had to go. You know, and so I was already drunk, and I was thinking, this is a wonderful thing that she's talking about. But when she goes to sleep, I'm going to keep getting drunk, you know. And I remember trying to put on my clothes and balance myself. I was a fall down. I want to tell you. I'm going to be clean, never mind. I had a lot of accidents, let's just put it like that. Anyway, and the cleanup version just is not the same. I had a lot of accidents when I was drinking, a lot. And so I remember trying to balance and put my clothes on, thinking to myself, I just need to make the liquor store one more time. Then we can do the sobriety thing tomorrow. Let me get out of here. And as I was leaving out the door, trying to be sober and trying to balance and trying to leave quietly, her children said, Mama, Monique is leaving. And I thought, those little bastards, this is my first curse word. I said, they have had drunks here before, right? So the next day, and Lucille came up. She was militant. She had to be because, I'm really not tough. I'm not a fighter. I never have been. But just being black sometimes scare folks, you know what I mean? So I know she can fight because she's black anyway. So anyway. And Lucille talks a lot of crap, and I knew she could beat me up. So I was like, thank God for that, because I needed that. I needed that. Sit down, Monique. You're not going anywhere. 90 minutes, 90 days. Don't pick the first drink. You want to get drunk. And I thought, that's what it is. She's not trying to get in my panties. She's crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah. She's crazy. Anyway, that's all right. So the next thing, Lucille asked me, Monique, what are your priorities? Damn. Don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk. Keep the bug in the drug. And I have not found it necessary to drink since then. And if you're alcoholic like I'm alcoholic, that is huge. I could not believe it. Here's the other thing about that. I had just gotten paid, and it wasn't a party I could think of. Well, I had money in my pocket, and I wasn't drunk. That's the next freedom. The next day, I still had money in my pocket. This is not me. The other thing that happened is that the compulsion to drink was lifted. I didn't even know what compulsion was. I just drank. And so, what are your priorities, Monique? Don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk. Keep the plug in the tub. That's the first drink to get you drunk. And I don't know about you all, and if I want to say this again, if you be alcoholic like I be alcoholic, those are life-changing words. And I stand here before you today as a result of those words. Nobody in my drinking circle, nobody ever told me that. Thank you. Thank you, Lucille. So it didn't matter the next day if Lucille wanted to get in my bloomers, because at that point, she could have them. Grateful. I want to tell you what happened. It was the beginning. 2 weeks had gone by. Another paycheck. Another Friday. I'm not drinking. My friends are looking for me now. My drinking buddies. Where are you, Monique? You know, you're not showing up anymore. I'm not. I can't believe it. One catches me in the car on the way to an AA meeting. Guess what I tell her? I'm on my way to an AA meeting. I can't believe I'm even having these conversations. Now I'm driving, and guess what, folks? I'm making my destination. Prior to that, watch out. She's driving. I'm a little bit like that today, aren't I, Phil? Anyway. But I'm not drunk. Anyway, and this girl, she said, Monique, you want to come on over, and have some gin? I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. No, you haven't. Linda, guess where I'm going? I'm going to an AA meeting. Do you want to go? Hell no, I don't want to go. But anyway. I cannot believe it. My life begins to change. Here's the other thing that happened to me is that she picked my sponsor. Thank you. People talk about having no self-esteem or low self-esteem. I had none. She said, Betty is going to be your sponsor. Thank you, God, because guess what? If I had to ask, I still wouldn't have one. You know what I mean? I had no, there was no way you were going to reject me. I rejected myself. Hell no, I ain't asking. I tell people today, it's not like marriage, but it might as well have been, because I was so afraid of being rejected. I wasn't going to ask you, but Betty was my sponsor. Thank God for that. Betty took me through the steps of a wonderful lady. One of the things she said, Mike, I hope you find yourself in somebody. What the hell is she talking about now? Damn, you people are crazy. You know, more with be revealed. That used to bitch. Tell me what the hell are you talking about? Marvel be revealed. You know. And here's the other thing. You know, in doing the steps, she called me. She called me. I think I'm 2 months sober. My phone rang. She wanted to see how I was doing. The next day at the meeting, they knew my name, and it wasn't bitch. It was not bitch. They said, Monique, welcome back. Good God Almighty. Wow. I walked through the steps. She took me through the steps. I was scared about the fourth step. I said I was going to do a little different because I talked a lot about the drunk a lot last time. I was scared of the fourth step. I was scared of me. I was scared of who I was going to see. You know what I mean? When I got here, I would have traded places with anybody. Anybody but me. Today, I wouldn't trade places with anyone. I like Lana. Even the cleaned up version. I'm liking her a little better, too. I did say a couple of them, but I'm doing better. I'm looking at that clock, too. Yes. Anyway, and I had to really, really lean on the third step to get to the fourth. I was petrified. I had to really, really, every time I got ready to write, I was so scared of me. And the only reason I did the fourth step is because Frank came like 6 months after me. And people loved Frank in the meeting. This is a Frank. Oh, this is Frank, wonderful. You know, look what Frank has to say. And I'm like, that bastard, he's getting better faster than me. Yeah, I bet he did the fourth step. That's what I'm thinking. He's not going to beat me in this shit, so I'm getting ready to do my fourth step. That's what happened. It wasn't because I wanted to do it. I was just like, I ain't going to let Frank beat me. Shoot, you know. So anyway, so I did the fourth step, petrified. But I said, you know, relieve me of the bondage of self. Third step prayer. Every time I got ready to write. Because I don't know about you, but you said fearless. I was full of fear. Full of fear. So relieve me of the bondage of self. Wrote it down. Then we did the fifth step. And I'm thinking, we spent 4 hours, fifth step. I wrote it down. We had my meeting. I spent 4 hours, and she talking about her damn self. Ain't that something? I spent all afternoon and I'm going to listen about her. Did not have a clue. She's talking about me. Didn't have a clue. You know what I mean? It was 2 weeks later. I'm like, dang. She was talking about me. Anyway, come find out Frank had not done his fourth step, you know? But I did. Anyway, you know, and went through the steps, started working with people, started sponsoring people, starting to find a little bit about who I am. I wear this natural today because I'm a black woman, not in spite of being one. Isn't that wonderful? She said, Monique, what does she call herself? But she said she was a hillbilly or something. I just love her. Her name was Bumble. She says, I'm a hillbilly. You know, just as proud of me. Okay. So, I mean, you know, so I hope you find yourself. And she is so right. This has been our journey. This has been our journey beyond my wildest drunken dreams. I am now in school. I'm just fast forward. I'm now in school. I'm working on my bachelor's degree. You know, I'm a lifelong learner. I got that here. In fact, I was supposed to be in class tonight. It's a good thing they don't call me to remind me because I'm in class tonight and I talk to my teacher and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the things that AA has taught me to do, be accountable. I will tell you this, that 1 year in my sobriety, they said don't make any major decisions within your first year. A year after my sobriety, Rufus committed suicide. I was almost 2 years sober. That is when the love of the people in the fellowship really showed themselves. People surrounded me and protected me and put white light around me in a way I couldn't imagine. I just couldn't imagine. So this is what I've heard said, that God's love won't take you where his grace won't keep you. I'm telling you, you guys are angels. I'm so grateful for that because I was going crazy. From a girl who did not have any feelings to now all these feelings are coming up. I had to learn how to grieve. I had no idea. I had to learn how to feel. I didn't have a clue. So I heard that said here too. In sobriety, I want you to feel better. Yeah. Oh my God! You get to feel better. Yes, you do. And sometimes it has to hurt to heal. Dang. I'm so grateful for that. So I am in school. I'm working on my bachelor's degree. I am the caretaker of a 13-year-old who has special needs. He's a product of alcoholic parents. And so derived out of that are some of those things. Philip and I are learning how to co-parent this individual, and it's been a challenge because having kids forces you to do what? Grow up. Damn. Phew. I gotta do that, you know, and I'm so grateful. I get to do these things. And for the most part, you know what? I want to say this, that you guys are safe as long as I'm sober. You're safe. And it's a wonderful thing. I couldn't, you know, and that was the other thing about me quitting, too, is that I didn't mind dying. In fact, I really wanted to die. But I didn't want to kill you. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to kill you. So, for the most part, when I get behind the wheel, I'm safe today. For the most part. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that. And you know what? There's not a whole lot more for me to say. Except that this, I will tell you this, that this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Far none. The greatest thing. Like Lucia said, without my sobriety, there is no more need. And when I think about the joy that I feel about being sober, I hope that if you didn't hear anything else, I am so grateful for that. And the thing is this, you still don't have to drink. That's what recovery does for me. You do not have to. Now I have a choice. Before AA, I had to. Now I don't. Tell you a joke. This guy talks about, you know, a guy got drunk and that, you know, and he was saying something along the lines of, you know, well, so-and-so was saying how much time he had sober and that kind of thing. And he was saying, well, so-and-so, he said that you were just drunk last night at the liquor store. I saw you. He said, yes. He says, yes, I was drunk. He says, but I did not find it necessary. In other words, yes, I did got drunk, but I didn't have to. You know, and I think about that. I did not find it necessary to drink, and I'm so grateful. So for that, you know, I guess that's it. Love you guys. Thank you all for having me, and I'm going to keep coming back.